Hello, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to Tuesday. Thanks to Brad Friedman for filling in Friday. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it very much. Yesterday was Labor Day. That's the holiday that commemorates all the furniture makers in America and the ones that import their furniture here. It's National Furniture Sale Day. It has nothing to do with labor. That ended a long time ago. Come on. It's Furniture Sale Day. Have you noticed that? Huh? Have you? Right. Okay. This hour is being sponsored by Don Florence. I want you to hear his message. It comes with us. Atmospheric physics knows no excuses, no religion, no politics, no regret, no sympathy. It simply is. We must understand the scientific method, think logically, and realize the sheer inexorability of physical laws. Those laws will not accommodate us. We must accommodate ourselves to them. Global warming is a giant reality test that we are failing. We must stop failing ourselves and future generations, and we must, in any way we can, each can, inform and persuade the White House, Congress, and other leaders to stop failing us and the planet. Don Florence. Absolutely, Don. How do you get that message out? You know, that's something we focus on considerably on this program. Global climate change. Now, I realize for people who have no nieces or nephews or kids or grandchildren or cousins or grandmas or aunties or family pets or spouses or significant others, it doesn't matter. But if you fall into any of those categories, it should matter to you very, very much. I mean, if you're here on your own, and there are some people here on their own, then I guess it doesn't matter, because when you stop, everything about you stops. Your DNA has hit a brick wall, and that's the end of it. But if you fall into any of the previous categories, you may want to think of a way to do this. God knows I can't. I've tried to get the word out, to influence the people who continue to drill and punch holes in the earth and pollute the air and destroy every goddamn thing there is. Yeah, including the President of the United States. Oh, no. It's too early in the program to get this depressed. Hey, if Paul Ryan will lie every time he opens his mouth about politics, and he is. He's the most astonishing liar, I think, to ever come down the pike. Like I mentioned, when I watched him give excerpts of his speech, where he lied and lied and lied, and then his cute little kids run out on stage and hug their lying father. How do you do that? When did these kids, what will happen when they finally realize all the lies that their daddy told them? Whether it's about the Virgin Mary or global warming or poor people or, you know, lies, every single thing. Now, you expect a politician to lie about politics. But Paul Ryan lied to Hugh Hewitt, radio talk show thing, in an interview. He said he had run a marathon in just under 3 hours. This is in the New Yorker.com. Runners were skeptical, and eventually his claim was revealed to be untrue. This son of a bitch will lie about anything. He actually ran a marathon in over 4 hours. So the other night, Paul Ryan gave the New Yorker a statement. The race was more than 20 years ago, but my brother Tobin, who ran Boston last year, reminds me that he's the owner of the fastest marathon in the family and has never himself run a sub-3. If I were to do any rounding, it would certainly be to 4 hours, not three. He gave me a good ribbing over this at dinner tonight. Gave me a good ribbing. You lying, stinking rat son of a bitch, you. You will lie about everything, won't you? Now, does it matter? Doesn't matter that Paul Ryan, this is a Rosie Ruiz. What was her name? Rosie Ruiz? This is, doesn't matter that this rat bastard lies about everything, including running a marathon? As James Fallows pointed out on the Atlantic One website, in one way, it obviously doesn't. It has no bearing at all on the Republic how fast Paul Ryan ran. Paul Ryan could surely beat any of the other major candidates or the Supreme Court justices in a foot race. But in another way, it is important. Is a potential vice president the sort of person who lies congenitally? Yes, of course he is. Here's a transcript of what Ryan said to Hugh Hewitt. Hugh Hewitt, are you still running? Ryan, yeah, I hurt a disc in my back, so I don't run marathons anymore. I just run 10 miles or less. Hugh Hewitt, but you did run marathons at some point. Paul Ryan, yeah, but I can't do it anymore because my back is just not that great. Hugh Hewitt, I just got to ask, what's your personal best? Paul Ryan, under three, high twos, high twos. I had a 2 hour and 50-something. Hugh Hewitt, holy smokes, all right. Now, you go down to Miami University, Paul Ryan. I was fast when I was younger, yeah. This New Yorker points out what is striking about the exchange is how he responds to Hewitt's, holy smokes. A four-hour marathon for a 20-year-old is not something that elicits a, holy smokes. It's entirely average. In fact, for the race that Ryan ran, it was below average. In the marathon in question, he finished in 1990th place. But Hugh Hewitt's reaction didn't set off any alarm. Instead, Ryan could tell that he had just impressed his host, and he reinforced it by saying, I was fast when I was younger, yeah. Hugh Hewitt! Well, so I get an email about all this from our educational affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini in San Francisco. And she writes, we know that politicians lie about many things. And we know that Paul Ryan took at least five whoppers during his Iron speech last week. But lying about his marathon time? That is really, really low. Having run three marathons, I can say, this is Kay talking, I don't run. Having run three marathons, I can say that crossing the finish line after 26.2 miles is incredible. I will never forget the joy of reaching that goal, nor will I ever forget my times. Okay, so maybe I don't remember them down to the fraction of a second, but I can definitely give you hours and minutes for each one. I would never lie about the fact that all of my marathons have been over 5 hours. Yeah, I'm always in the back of the pack, but God damn it, I finish! And I'm proud of that. Paul Ryan's ego must be enormous for him to put himself in the category just below elite marathoners, most of whom easily cross the finish line in less than 2 hours, 30 minutes. He must also be utterly clueless, as most of his lying Republican cohorts are. Hello, marathon times are recorded, along with pretty much everything else these days. All it takes is a quick Google and you can pull up the time of pretty much any race that any runner has participated in. So, Ryan is a liar and a dishonorable athlete. But as upsetting as that is to those of us who take our running seriously, I have to agree with what Andy Borowitz wrote over the weekend. Quote, I worry that the story of Paul Ryan lying about his marathon time will overshadow the fact that he's a sociopath. End quote. K, five-plus-hour marathoner and damn proud of it. Somebody who will lie. It's like, what was the recent Supreme Court decision? If you want to lie about your military service and what kind of battle awards you may have gotten, you can do that.
look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. Couple emails here. Andre, about lying politicians, Republicans. Andre writes, they lie about everything because they accomplish nothing. And they corrupt their children at an early age, so they become just as cynical. Michael in Roswell writes, from long experience, one can always tell habitual liars because they lie about the inconsequential things as well as the big things. Paul Ryan's an habitual liar. Makes them an ideal Republican. And Bob Alexander writes, Ryan lies, but they hung Gore on the internet invention thing. Will anyone care in the mainstream? Of course not. Remember that? Al Gore said he was instrumental in developing the internet as a government operation. Remember? Remember how the right-wingers just went after him, went after the way he dressed? Al Gore says he invented the internet! Remember that? Son of a bitches. Where are you now? You've got a real liar in the slot to become vice president of the United States. What are you going to do about it? He runs 2 minute plus marathon or 2 hour plus marathons. What are you going to do about it? Right wing media? Come on. You're going to be like Hugh Hewitt and say, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Really? Oh gosh, golly. Oh my gosh. Hugh Hewitt. Oh, Jesus God. What a piece of work he is. No, you probably never heard of him. Scott from Minneapolis writes, Mike, a few Republicans half-heartedly rebuked Todd Akin's legitimate rape comments because they were insensitive to women in general and rape victims in particular. Good for them. Very mature. Many more than that just shrugged it off or even supported him and still do. But what if, instead of a reporter, Akin had been speaking to a large African-American church? Picture this. Akin is standing in front of 2,000 African-Americans in a church, 80% of whom have the blood of white slave owners running in their veins. A woman can't get pregnant if it's legitimate rape, he says. And after every jaw hits the floor, he says, oops, I made a gaffe. I meant you can't get pregnant from force of, no, wait. Is it any wonder these guys have 0% of the black vote? Need more? When Clint Eastwood gave his speech, he chose, out of all his movies, The Outlaw Josie Wales, the most pro-Confederate movie since Birth of a Nation. Dog whistle? That was a freaking air raid siren. Anyone even thinking about voting Republican, and you are condoning this garbage. Scott from Minneapolis. Yeah, that's the truth. Do you suppose these right-wingers will ever be redeemed? And Chuck Norris. You want to hear more crazy right-wing garbage before we get to a real program topic here? Chuck Norris has offered a dire warning to America, claiming that U.S. citizens face, quote, 1,000 years of darkness, end quote, if President Obama is reelected for a second term in November. In a 2-minute video posted at YouTube, which also includes workout tutorials and promotional appearances for something, Norris and his wife Gina warn of a, quote, growing concern, end quote, that the America we know it can be lost forever if Obama is reelected. Norris says, quote, if we look to history, our great country and freedom are under attack. We're at a tipping point, and quite possibly our country as we know it may be lost forever if we don't change the course in which our country is headed. The course in which? You mean on which, you semi-literate freak? And then his wife Gina cites the statistic that in 2008, more than 30 million evangelical Christians stayed home on voting day. And Obama won. Well, why? They had McCain and this horse's ass from Wasilla, Alaska, Sarah Palin. She's an evangelical caster-outer of demons. If the 30 million evangelical Christians stayed home on voting day, That had nothing to do with Obama. They could have gone and voted for McCain. Hey, Gina, stop drinking your husband's hair tonic. Gina goes on to quote Reagan, saying, "You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children this last best hope of man on earth, or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we fail, at least let our children and our children's children," I wonder if they're Moody Blues fans, "say of us, we justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done." Good Lord. Chuck Norris joins other celebrities who have endorsed Mitt Romney, including, well, Clint Eastwood, Jeff Foxworthy. You might be an asswipe if you live on a front porch in a tree. And possibly Nicki Minaj. We'll be right back.
Have a sleepless night. Can I introduce a catheter? Siphon up your life. Talk radio, I love you. You fulfill the day. You're a hideous reminder of how this country is. Talk radio.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Don Florence. And again, Don's message, atmospheric physics knows no excuses, no religion, no politics, no regret, no sympathy. It simply is. We must understand the scientific method, think logically, and realize the sheer inexorability of physical laws. Those laws will not accommodate us. We must accommodate ourselves to them. Global warming is a giant reality test that we are failing. We must stop failing ourselves and future generations, and we must, in any way we each can, inform and persuade the White House, Congress, and other leaders to stop failing us and the planet. Thanks, Don. It's a good message, and thanks for the sponsorship. As you know, we're about a week away from the 11th anniversary of the attack on September 11th, 2001. And the New York Post is reporting that the memorial at the World Trade Center is being disrespected by the visitors. Reports say that the memorial is being treated as a playground or a picnic area. New York Post said visitors have been seen splashing water from its two huge waterfalls to cool themselves off, have placed their children's butts on the bronze engraved names of the dead. In a letter to Memorial President Joe Daniels, the head of the FDNY EMS Retirees Association, said she saw visitors acting, quote, like this was a park or a playground, end quote. Marianne Pizzitola, who's the president of the FDNY EMS Retirees Association, wrote, quote, "People laughed and took pictures smiling, and so many people leaned on the tablets with all of my friends' names engraved in them, holding Starbucks cups like it was a kitchen table," end quote. A relative of one victim wrote to Bill Doyle, the Coalition of 9/11 Families, that a tourist, quote, "spilt coffee all over my son's name after she arose from sitting on the names," end quote. Mike Burke, whose brother Billy was among the first responders who died that day, said, quote, "They're taking pictures, very happy. They could be in Times Square." End quote. Now, according to Huffington Post, although some visitors are directed to the memorial's rules of decorum when they reserve their passes, some have been booted for boorish behavior. In June, a group of high school or junior high school students from Brooklyn were kicked out of the memorial after throwing trash in its huge fountains. Not everyone objects to picnics there. The New York Observer condemned what it called the disrespectful, even deplorable behavior, but said, quote, bemoaning the picnics is going too far. When the World Trade Center site is eventually finished, assuming it ever will be, there'll be a brand new 8-acre park in the heart of downtown, a place like so many of like so much of Manhattan, that is starved for open space. It is a destination to rival Bryant Park or Union Square. And the centerpiece of this space, the Observer went on, will be the memorial. It deserves all due deference, but it should not be treated as a cemetery. Thousands of bodies may be interred on these 16 acres, but just as children frolic on the National Mall, the Vietnam and Korean War memorials are no worse off for it. The same goes for the 9/11 memorial, end quote. I really don't have a response to that. Do you, Truth Seeker? I just don't. I mean, I think it is ridiculous to expect Americans to show respect in a manner that is that one would think would be warranted. Showing respect is just not a national trait, unless it's a sports figure or a film star. Then, of course, we show respect. But if it's something that has to do with death or life or challenges or, you know, as a general rule, American citizens do not show respect. The attitude seems to be, so what's that got to do with me? I didn't have anything to do with this. You know, what's that got to do with, you know? I come down here to look at stuff, you know. Right? I mean, that isn't that the truth, or am I being too much of a cynic? I don't know. I just got over this holiday, this National Furniture Sale Day, and I'm still trying to recover, you know. Do you celebrate National Furniture Sale Day? Comes the first Monday of September. Every year. National Furniture Sale Day. From Think Progress, last month, Obama's reelection campaign filed a lawsuit claiming that a recently enacted Ohio law eliminating early voting in the 3 days before an election, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, except for members of the military, violates the Constitution's guarantee that all voters enjoy equal access to the franchise. Now, because Obama objected, the Obama administration filed a lawsuit, the right-wingers immediately spun it as though the Obama administration was trying to deny the military the right to vote. What they said was, what the lawsuit said was, nobody should be denied the right to vote early voting on these 3 days prior to an election, whether it's military or not. And you can't pass a law that exempts a certain part of the population. That's just civics 101. But keep in mind what we're talking about here. We're talking about Republicans. We're talking about right-wingers. We're talking about Ohio. Now, the Obama campaign's lawsuit called for the right of all voters to cast an early ballot, that be restored in Ohio. And the lawsuit explicitly stated that expanding the franchise, not taking early voting away from military personnel as well, was the appropriate outcome. But the right-wingers immediately said, they're trying to deny the military the right to vote early. You know, typical right-wing filth. In an opinion by Judge Peter Economos, the federal court agreed with the Obama campaign on Friday that the Ohio anti-voter law must be suspended. The court ruled, quote, a citizen has a constitutionally protected right to participate in elections on an equal basis with other citizens in the jurisdiction. In Ohio, that right to participate equally has been abridged by the law that was passed. And the Ohio Secretary of State's further interpretation of that statute with regard to in-person early voting. Blah, blah, blah. Now, the court's opinion relies on the Supreme Court's infamous decision in Bush v. Gore to reach this conclusion, citing Bush's statement that, quote, having once granted the right to vote on equal terms, the state may not, by later arbitrary and disparate treatment, value one person's vote over that of another, end quote. The Romney campaign opposed the Obama's position in this lawsuit. Had the Romney position prevailed, as many as 900,000 military veterans could have had their right to vote impeded. Now, that was the ruling on Friday. Guess what happened today? The Ohio Secretary of State is refusing to comply with the court order. John Husted, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio, says no. He's not going to do it. Husted claims expanding hours before an appeals court hears his case, quote, will only serve to confuse voters. Ohioans, are you that goddamn stupid? You must be if you elected John Kasich and Kasich appointed this piece of human waste. Only serve to confuse voters if you go back to what it was. That's what the Secretary of State in Ohio, Republican troll, is saying. Husted first restricted the voting hours in Democratic-leaning urban counties to weekdays only, then restricted all counties' voting schedules after complaints of unfairness. In spite of several counties' requests to stay open on weekends when most employed people have time to vote, Husted has flatly refused to accommodate them. So here you have a federal appeals court, or a federal court, saying that what the Republican Secretary of State ordered, an end to early voting except for the military, was not only unconstitutional, but it was also against the spirit of the law that underpins any constitutional republic, and that is the right of the people to vote. But you see, Republicans don't want you to vote. And the reason is because nobody who is sane would vote Republican. There are a lot of crazy people in this country. That's absolutely given. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Don Florence, and the message that comes with his sponsorship is pretty important. He writes, atmospheric physics knows no excuses, no religion, no politics, no regret, no sympathy. It simply is. And we must understand the scientific method, think logically, and realize the sheer inexorability of physical laws. Those laws will not accommodate us. We must accommodate ourselves to them. Global warming is a giant reality test that we're failing. We must stop failing ourselves and future generations, and we must, in any way we each can, inform and persuade the White House, Congress, and other leaders to stop failing us and the planet. Don Florence. Thank you, Don. Did you know that the Romney family, when when Mrs. Romney gave her heartwarming little talk about her husband's family. Wasn't that inspiring? Do you remember that? Mark Carlin, the editor of Buzzflash at Truthout, explains how the Romney family, well, let me go to his words. He said he writes, the most effective and politically potent moment of the Republican convention was not seen by most Americans. It was a biography of the Romneys that did momentarily bring a Hollywood manufactured aura of personal amiability to the couple, the Romneys. Unfortunately for the hapless Romney campaign advisors, the video was shown before the golden hour of national television coverage in order to make time for the appearance that now is known as the Clint Eastwood Outer Limits moment. One quickly glossed over moment in the video, however, is when Mitt Romney states that his father and grandparents came back to the U.S. to escape a revolution. Uh-huh. They were escaping the Mexican Revolution in 1912. But Romney omits a bit of the story that is quite telling, according to the Boston Globe. George Romney was born in Mexico. That's Mitt's daddy. And was 5 years old when a revolution forced his family members in 1912 to flee their Mormon colony and seek refuge in the United States. The Mormon exiles lost their homes, their farms, and most of their belongings. They were welcomed by the United States and benefited from a $100,000 refugee fund established by Congress. We're talking 1912 now. But there are other elements to the Romney story that may explain why he doesn't tell the full tale on the campaign trail. The reason that George was born in Mexico is that his grandfather, Mitt's great-grandfather, had taken refuge there in order to escape U.S. laws against polygamy. It was this family patriarch, Miles Park Romney, who established the colony and lived there with four wives. And according to the Global Post, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney's ancestors reportedly fled to Mexico in the 19th century to practice polygamy after it was banned in the United States. Romney's great-grandfather, Miles Park Romney, fled to Mexico after the 1882 passing of the Edmund Act, which banned polygamy in the U.S. He, Romney's great-grandfather, married his fifth wife after the Mormon Church formally banned the practice in 1890. Now, no one's going to hold his ancestors' polygamy against the devoutly monogamous, as far as we know, Mitt Romney. But it is an interesting omission from his campaign narrative, considering that he is a devout Mormon. The only reason the Mormon Church banned polygamy was that it was a required concession for Utah to become a state in 1896. More interesting, perhaps, is the Boston Globe reference to U.S. government welfare being received by the polygamous so-called refugees from Mexico, who had fled the United States to pursue the practice. Doesn't that mean that Mitt Romney's dad received welfare of sorts, that he didn't build it on his own? Mitt Romney's father and family were, according to Paul Ryan's definition, parasites. Parasites. They abandoned the United States for multiple marriages and then came back and went on the dole. So Mitt Romney wouldn't be a multi-billionaire today if it weren't for the Federal Aid Safety Network provided to his father all those years ago. But you see, to the American collective mind, ancient history is what happened during the Reagan years. You want to go back to 1912? Forget about it. 1912? Well, that isn't even real. 1912? What, were dinosaurs then? So, this year, especially this year, I mean, the right-wingers, the neo-fascist party in this country has been drifting and drifting and drifting towards this. And then the drifting stopped and the leaders of the party began paddling towards this. And then they realized that all they had to do was attach an outboard motor and they could go a lot faster. And then they put a jet engine on and now they are hell-bent to take this country to fascism. So any truth that is inconvenient, hey, that'd make a good title for a book or a movie, wouldn't it? Inconvenient. Oh, never mind. Any truth that is inconvenient is left out or is lied about. Paul Ryan, well, I ran a, 2 hour plus of a marathon. So Mitt Romney's family, not only were they lawbreakers to the extent that they had to flee the country. Of course, it was religious law, so it doesn't really count. I mean, look how many wives that King David had. Look how many that Solomon had. I mean, come on. So Mitt Romney's great-grandpappy had 5 wives. Yawn, please. But it's the going on the dole part. Hey, Mitt! I thought you built it yourself.
This is a referral.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Regarding the Ohio Secretary of State who has raised his middle finger to a federal court after a judge in that court issued a ruling that the Secretary of State had to reinstate early voting in the state of Florida. That to continue the prohibition of early voting on the 3 days before Election Day, as the Secretary of State is trying to do or has succeeded in doing, to do that would be to infringe on people's right to vote. And the Secretary of State in Ohio has more or less given his middle finger to the court. Michael in Roswell writes, there's a simple way to fix this Ohio Secretary of State's thumbing his nose at the court. The judge finds his testicles, his own, and issues a bench warrant for this guy's arrest on contempt. On contempt, he stays in federal prison until he complies with the court's order and apologizes to the judge, or he waits until an appeals court issues an injunction. Things like that used to happen when voting mattered. That's the truth, isn't it? But let's see. Let's just wait and see what happens. The judge issued the opinion or the ruling or whatever you call it last Friday. And today the Ohio Secretary of State more or less told the judge to kiss his ass, the Secretary of State's ass. Bishop Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Oh, by the way, this hour is being sponsored by Jocelyn Hudson. Thanks, Jocelyn. Here's her message. Happy 66th birthday to my husband, Glenn Gersmel. He currently is the director of the nonprofit organization Lutheran Peace Fellowship. Glenn has fought the good fight for years, longtime community organizer, oh heavens, and peace activist. He has always worked for his values in nonprofit, not making a lot of money, but remaining true to the cause. I'm proud to be married to him And our 14-year-old son Luke and myself wish him many more years of standing up for what's right. Well, that's nice, Jocelyn. Happy birthday, Glenn. Anglican Archbishop Laureate or Emeritus of Cape Town, South Africa, and a Nobel Laureate, had a piece in The Guardian of the UK this past Saturday. And he calls for the arrest of George W. Bush and former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair to face prosecution at the International Criminal Court for their role in the invasion of Iraq. Archbishop Tutu writes the following: "The immorality of the United States and Great Britain's decision to invade Iraq in 2003, premised on the lie that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction, has destabilized and polarized the world to a greater extent than any other conflict in history." Now, when you think about that, right? You know, right away, think, wait. Think about it. And he's right. Tutu went on, "Instead of recognizing that the world we live in, with increasingly sophisticated communications, transportations, and weapon systems, necessitates sophisticated leadership that would bring the global family together, the then leaders of the U.S. and the U.K. fabricated the grounds to behave like playground bullies and drive us further apart. They have driven us to the edge of a precipice where we now stand, with the specter of Syria and Iran before us. If leaders may lie, then who should tell the truth? Days before Bush and Blair ordered the invasion of Iraq, I," Desmond Tutu writes, "I called the White House and spoke to Condoleezza Rice, who was a national security advisor, to urge that United Nations weapons inspectors be given more time to confirm or deny the existence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Should they be able to confirm finding such weapons, I argued, dismantling the threat would have the support of virtually the entire world. Ms. Rice demurred, saying there was too much risk and the president would not postpone any longer." On what grounds do we decide that Robert Mugabe should go to the International Criminal Court? Tony Blair should join the international speaker circuit. Bin Laden should be assassinated. But Iraq should be invaded, not because it possesses weapons of mass destruction, as Mr. Bush's chief supporter, Mr. Blair, confessed last week, but in order to get rid of Saddam Hussein. The cost of the decision to rid Iraq of its, by all accounts, despotic and murderous leader has been staggering. Beginning in Iraq itself, last year an average of 6.5 people died there each day in suicide attacks and vehicle bombs, according to the Iraq Body Count Project. More than 110,000 Iraqis have died in the conflict since 2003. Millions have been displaced. By the end of last year, nearly 4,500 American soldiers had been killed, 32,000 wounded. On these grounds alone, in a consistent world, those responsible for the suffering and loss of life should be treading the same path as some of their African and Asian peers who have been made to answer for their actions in The Hague. But even greater costs have been exacted beyond the killing fields, in the hardened hearts and minds of members of the human family across the world. Has the potential for terrorist attacks decreased? To what extent have we succeeded in bringing the so-called Muslim and Judeo-Christian worlds closer together, in sowing the seeds of understanding and hope? Leadership and morality are indivisible. Good leaders are the custodians of morality. The question is not whether Saddam Hussein was good or bad, or how many of his people he massacred. The point is that Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair should not have allowed themselves to stoop to his immoral level. And he goes on. Now, for those of you who are followers of any sort of religious doctrine, especially those who would identify themselves as Christian, either Orthodox Christian or Anglican or whatever. Do you disagree with Desmond Tutu? Do you disagree with his charge that Bush and Blair should be brought before a court of justice in The Hague to answer for the crimes against humanity that the two of them engineered? Do you agree with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, or do you disagree? And I'm asking people, so-called people of faith, because he's one of your peers in that regard. Bishop Desmond Tutu is also a great humanitarian, but in the context of his religious presentation, the fact that he was the Anglican Archbishop in South Africa, a voice of moral force, I would just ask you, you folks who claim to be Christian, do you agree with Archbishop Desmond Tutu? Or do you think he's wrong? You don't have to send me an email or answer. I don't know. I guess I'm just asking you to consider the question.
Rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Bishop Desmond Tutu was... The reason he said, wrote what he wrote in The Guardian, the UK, this past Saturday, was because he was invited to a discussion at the Discovery Invest Leadership Summit in Johannesburg. And he writes that as the date drew near, I felt an increasingly profound sense of discomfort about attending a summit of leadership, quote, quote, with Mr. Blair. And he wound up the piece in The Guardian on Saturday saying, I extend my humblest and sincerest apologies to Discovery, the summit organizers, the speakers and delegates for the lateness of my decision not to attend. Now, you'll notice that, of course, George W. Bush was not on the guest list. First of all, because Bush was not a leader, but I think more importantly, because Bush knows pretty much that if he travels anywhere outside of North America, somebody is going to put him under arrest or attempt to. So I think Bush will be clear-eyed clearing brush down at Prairie Chapel. Remember that place? For the foreseeable future, what do you think? Last week I mentioned a case of an 11-year-old girl with Down syndrome who was caught holding burned pages from a book, an instructional manual on how to read the Quran. She was not holding burned pages of the Quran, but pages of an instructional manual. She was arrested and charged with blasphemy. And in Pakistan, that can mean you get your head cut off. Now it turns out that the Muslim cleric at the forefront of the campaign to prosecute this, oh, by the way, the girl was Christian, to prosecute her for blasphemy, this cleric has suddenly found himself at risk of facing the same charges after one of his colleagues went to the authorities and accused him of falsifying evidence of burned holy papers. The cleric, Muhammad Khalid Christie, who leads a mosque on Islamabad's outskirts, was arrested by a contingent of police officers late Saturday, presented before a judicial magistrate Sunday morning, and taken into custody for 14 days. Now the effort is underway to immediately release this child. After it turns out, isn't that, I mean, are you surprised? Are you surprised when you hear about Protestant ministers who preach against the evils of homosexual relationships and have a boyfriend? Or Catholic priests who stand in front of their congregations and quote Jesus, ignoring the part where Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven." And then they go bugger the altar boys. Are you surprised when a Muslim cleric deliberately, because he doesn't like Christians, in much the same way that Christians in this country, a lot of them don't like Muslims, but he falsifies evidence so that a 11, 12, 13-year-old girl with Down syndrome can be charged with blasphemy? Isn't religion great? Huh? Isn't it just... I'm not talking about people who like Desmond Tutu or like Glenn Gersmel. I'm not talking about people like that who do good works. I maintain that a lot of people who are of a religious affiliation and do good works would probably do the good works anyway because they are obviously decent people. So I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about religion, how religion teaches divisiveness and contempt and suspicion and paranoia. We'll be right back.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Jocelyn Hudson. And here's her message. Happy 66th birthday to my husband, Glenn Gersmell. He currently is the director of the nonprofit organization Lutheran Peace Fellowship. Glenn has fought the good fight for years, longtime community organizer and peace activist. He has always worked for his values in nonprofit, not making a lot of money, but remaining true to the cause. I'm proud to be married to him. And our 14-year-old son, Luke, and I wish him many more years of standing up for what is right. What a nice message. Thank you, Jocelyn. Thanks for the sponsorship, and happy birthday to Glenn. From Raw Story, this bit, you know, Condoleezza Rice, you could title it War Criminal Redux, but according to former Secretary of State and war criminal Condoleezza Rice, the chances are increasing that Israel will conduct a military strike on Iran over its nuclear program. She was on Bloomberg Television last Thursday, and she said, quote, "I think the chances are increasing." She said, quote, "The chances are also increasing that the sanctions are not going to work in time and that someone is going to have to take out that Iranian program." This is war criminal Condoleezza Rice speaking. "I will say this, the United States has to at least demonstrate that we have a usable military option." Have to demonstrate that we have a usable military option. "And the Iranians have to believe it. President Obama has said he has a military option. We need to let the Iranians know that we are fully prepared. The United States, not Israel, we are fully prepared to do something about the Iranian nuclear problem." Rice said it was impossible to predict when a strike on Iran would occur. Now, this is very much like the speech that she gave last Wednesday night in Tampa at the Republican convention, which was a war speech if I ever heard one. This woman is really out of her mind. This is a bloodthirsty war criminal. She didn't get enough with the invasion, occupation, and destruction of Iraq. This is a woman right up there with the freakishly bloodthirsty Dick Cheney. During that speech on Wednesday, she urged the United States to, quote, "sustain a balance of power that favors freedom." What? Sustain a balance of power that favors freedom. Freedom is slavery. Sustain a balance of power that favors freedom. She added, "We cannot be reluctant to lead." But this country is just chock-a-block with these people, these warmongers. Just absolutely loaded with them. The problem with Archbishop Desmond Tutu's request or demand that Bush and Blair go before a war crimes tribunal in The Hague, the problem with that was that it didn't go far enough. It wasn't just Bush and Blair. I'm a war president. I don't know how Tony Blair became George Bush's lapdog, but he certainly did, didn't he? Wasn't that something to see? Oh, that's ancient history. There is a writer at Vanity Fair named Kurt Eichenwald. According to Daily Coast, he has a Eichenwald has a blog post up that is being described as the most brutal, informed, fact-filled takedown of the Republicans that a lot of people have read anywhere. Now, it's not at Vanity Fair. It's at his blog site, but maybe Vanity Fair will publish it. The extremely long piece lists five reasons that Romney should not be elected president, but it's not simply a rant. Eichenwald, according to Daily Coast, Eichenwald cites facts, figures, and history to make the case that the Republicans are dangerous liars whose politics and policies threaten America's future. And he starts out, his opening words set up the argument. He starts out by saying the GOP must be stopped in 2012. The future of America's ideals of democracy could well be at stake. And he goes on, he says, what we talked about earlier tonight, lying has become so ingrained into the conservatives' national dialogue that they are now dangerously demagogic. How do you say that? Demagogic? Or worse, severely unhinged. Blind rage at the election of Barack Obama has wrecked this political party. Its leaders have made so many deals with the devil in their almost pathological obsession with unseating Obama that they have pushed the GOP into its own version of political hell. Unable to speak truths to their now rabid and conspiracy-addled base and unable to right the party back onto a path of responsibility. And Coase points out, Eichenwald tosses in an attack on the mainstream media for downplaying Republican dishonesty. He goes on to say, most of the major newspapers and networks have adopted a Marquess of Queensberry rules when addressing the utterances of utter falsehoods by Romney, Ryan, and their surrogates. Calling the words of Romney and Ryan, quote, at odds with the truth, or, quote, not factually accurate, is a coward's way of communicating that the entire Republican campaign is based on lies, innuendo, and more lies. He goes on, what is it about the state of Wisconsin? First, it brought us Joe McCarthy, and now it brings us Paul Ryan, two men willing to say anything, tell any lie, appeal to any fear, if it means advancing their political careers. GOP leaders have stoked this furnace of hate, and in the process have both trapped themselves with a new base of voters divorced from reality and allowed for the empowerment of the reckless and dangerous people who used to be at the fringes of the Republican Party. Demagogues depend on hate and fear. Once they're unleashed, those emotional forces are hard to put back in the bottle. And it goes on. It's a fairly lengthy piece. Hopefully it'll wind up in Vanity Fair. But the impression I'm getting, and maybe you're getting it also. Oh, by the way, we don't have much time left in this hour, but if you want to call in, the lines are open, 877-996-2556. But I think we're getting to the point now where it is totally clear, that the Republican Party, even though it has always been, at least in modern political history, going back to, I don't know, the 30s, 20s, 1920s, 1930s, the Republican Party has degenerated into what Eichenwald says, just the fringe has taken over the mainstream. I mean, it was one thing to laugh and guffaw at Barry Goldwater and the John Birch Society and people who insisted that Eisenhower was a communist. I mean, there were jackasses. They were crazy people, and everybody knew it. And nobody gave them the kind of credit that was necessary to move them from the fringes into the mainstream. And take a look at it now. But the Republican Party has become a party of absolute unhinged nutcases. Have you ever seen anything like this? I'm serious. Even you people who claim to be Republicans, I mean, surely to God, you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed when Paul Ryan stands there and tells lie after lie. Even you people on the crazy teabag right, you know a lie, don't you? When you hear one, or have you lost that ability too? And to hear these Republicans, Ryan and Romney and everybody who speaks for the Republican Party, just don't even bother with shading the truth or cutting the truth loose from its moorings or speaking half-truths like, say, some pig like Limbaugh. These people have gone completely over the edge and tell you lies to your face, to the faces of millions of Americans watching on television. Complete fabrication. And the hotshot anchor people that are supposed to be covering this circle jerk, such as it was down in Tampa, don't have the courage to just state categorically, these are lies. We'll be right back.
Who was sane and who was crazy? Who was wrong and who was right? Who was numbered with the angels and who sided with the devil? Who was good and who was evil? It was all so black and white. But the years have taught me better. Good and evil do not matter. Their words are masters scattered to hide their bloody hands. And what's truth and what's illusion? What's order or confusion? Who's winning or who's losing? Just depends on where you stand. There is no God. Father, forgive us.
Welcome. Welcome to the inn. Do not panic. There is nothing to fear. Everything around you is changing. Nothing stays the same. This version of myself is not permanent. Tomorrow, I will be different. The energy never dies. Energy cannot be destroyed or created. It always is, and it always will be. This is the end and the beginning. Forever. Infinite. Welcome.
Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Yep, 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 yep.
Boom, boom, boom.
Gotta get that.
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 Boom, boom, boom.
That boom, boom, boom.
That boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom.
Yo, I got that hit to beat the block. You can get that bass on below. I got that rock and roll. That future flow. That digital spit, next level visual shit. I got that
boom, boom, boom.
How to beat bang.
I like that boom, boom, pow. Them chickens jacking my style. They try to copy my swagger. I'm on that next shit now. I'm sold 3008. You sold 2000 and late. I got
That boom, boom, boom. Supersonic boom, y'all hear that spaceship? Zoom. When I step inside the room, them girls go ape shit. Y'all stuck on super ape shit. That lo-fi stupid ape bit. I'm on that HD flat. This beat go boom boom bap. I'm a beast when you turn me on. Into the future, Cybertron. Harder, faster, better, stronger. Texting ladies extra longer. Cause we gotta beat that bounce. We gotta beat that pound. We gotta beat that 808. That boom boom in your town.
People in the place, if you wanna get down, put your hands in the air. Will I am, drop the beat now.
I'll be rocking in beats. Yup, yup. I'll be rocking in beats. Yup, 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 yup.
To play for the love that's deep inside. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. So I love this story about the chairman of the California Democratic Party, John Burton. It always works this way, doesn't it? You know, I've said this 1,000 times since I have, in the past 10 years. It didn't always used to be this way. But I must have said it 1,000 times, give or take 400 or 500. And that is, these goddamn Republicans can lie until their teeth fall out. And not a single commentator on television or radio will call them liars. I mean, we just had the spectacle of Ryan and Romney at the Republican convention in Tampa just lying through their asses. I mean, just almost every policy position they took was a lie. Every statement they made about Obama was a lie. Everything, top to bottom. And the high-paid, high-priced pundits sit there on Morning Joe or the NBC Nightly News or MSNBC's this and that and the other thing. And not one of them, with the possible exception of Chris Matthews, would just come out and say you're a liar. And why not? You know, it's cable. Why not say you're a goddamn liar? But let somebody speak the truth. Especially when the truth happens to encapsulate the tactics used by the National Socialist Party in Germany back in the 30s. Let anybody point out the similarities, some national political figure, and oh my God, the gates of hell open wide, and the demons, the little Republicans and all the dead Republicans with little pitchforks come running out, stabbing and pushing and yelling and screaming, spreading the smell of brimstone all over. Oh, what did he say? What did he say? Take it back, take it back. Or am I exaggerating? You think I'm exaggerating? Thus spake the chairman of the California Democratic Party over in Charlotte yesterday, Charlotte, North Carolina. He was being interviewed by somebody from KCBS Radio. And he said that Republican tactics had been akin to Nazi propaganda. He never used the word Nazi, but he didn't have to. He said, John Burton said, quote, they lie and they don't care if they and they don't care if people think they lie. As long as you lie, Joseph Goebbels, the big lie, you keep repeating it, you know. First of all, you've got Republicans who truly believe the earth is flat. So I don't know exactly what, you know, what's going to do, but they, I think that when people figure out that these people say they do not care about the truth and they will lie and that they don't care if they lie because it doesn't matter if they lie. I mean, that's very cynical, very dangerous. Now, that's what Burton said, according to KCBS. That's what he said. There is not a grain of falsehood in that. He is absolutely right. From the top of the Republican Party down to the sewer where they got Paul Ryan. They don't care. They don't care if they lie. Because to a lot of these half-asses, these Catholics and the Protestants and the Mormons, lying is perfectly acceptable. Because you'll always have that moment on your deathbed to say, I'm sorry, Jesus, forgive me, thud. And if you don't get that, if you have a massive coronary and you're dead before you hit the pavement, well, lying to further the glory of God is okay. And to these freaks, that's exactly what they're doing. The Goebbels reference drew quick response and rebuke from Republicans. Bah! Ah! Burton said, reporter from KCBS asked Burton whether Democrats were ever guilty of embellishing or taking things out of context. Oh, we're going to find balance now. Are you KCBS? You looking for that rare quality of balance between these goddamn Nazis and the corporate party of the Democrats? Yeah. So when KCBS asked Burton whether Democrats are ever guilty of embellishing or taking things out of a context, Burton responded, embellishing and lying are two different things. What Paul Ryan said was a bold-faced lie to all the American people. And he doesn't care that it was a lie because it doesn't matter because it sounds good. Oh, jumping Jesus. Oh, listen. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Burton, listen, you're in deep doo-doo now. So there was all kinds of screaming and frothing at the mouth and these filthy Nazi Republicans, Nazi Republicans, frothing at the mouth, just like little boys caught on the playground, pulling the little girl's panties down, and the teacher catches them. Oh, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. She made me. So here they are. Screaming for an apology. So Burton apologized for comparing Republicans to Nazi propaganda chief Goebbels. He said, quote, in a statement, quote, if Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, or the Republicans are insulted by my describing their campaign tactic as the big lie, I most humbly apologize to them or anyone who might have been offended by that comment. I'll accept that. I'll accept that, John. Sure. That's a non-apology apology. And here's the thing. When you are forced to apologize for telling the truth, do you not live in Goebbels' land? I mean, do the Republicans not? I don't know if they get it or not. But forcing someone to apologize for telling the truth, is that not exactly what Goebbels and Himmler and Hitler and the rest of the Nazi bully boys forced people to do? Apologize for telling the truth, and then we should put a bullet in your head. Apologize for telling the truth, and then it's off to the death camps. So in screeching and squealing, as these Republicans do, for an apology when the truth is dumped on their punkin' little heads, they prove the truth of what Burton said. They lie and they don't care if people think it's a lie. Or they lie and they don't care if people think they lie. As long as you lie, as long as you do the Joseph Goebbels thing, the big lie, you keep repeating it, repeating it, repeating it. And eventually, enough people believe it so that when you point out what these rat bastards are doing, they can start screaming for your head. Burton also said that was Goebbels, the big lie. And they said they don't care about facts. They're going to lie. So, I mean, that's not pejorative to them. They probably wear it as a compliment. And they do. Republicans do see it as a compliment. Ha ha! You caught me lying. Well, I'm doing it for Jesus or Moroni or the Virgin Mary or somebody. Ha ha! The Romney campaign reacted sharply to Burton's remarks. Romney campaign said, President Obama promised to lift up American politics. Can you believe it right there? I mean, that's as far as you have to go. President Obama promised to lift up American politics. And then these scum-sucking cockroaches, hours after Obama is sworn into the office of the presidency, they're laying their plots and their plans to undermine and gut his entire 4 years. Huh? Huh? President Obama's promise to lift up American politics. Isn't that so typical of the schoolyard bully? More on their statement when we come back.
Sit up and pay attention.
Bedtime Lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
Past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous in Seattle. Thanks, Anonymous. The message, strike back against corporate media. Sponsor Mike Malloy today and tomorrow. Thanks, Anonymous, for the sponsorship and the message. Desperately needed that message. Strike back against corporate media. Chairman of the California Democratic Party, John Burton, made a factual statement, a statement based on history, a statement based on the sociological impact of the big lie that the Nazis perfected. Say anything, say it enough times, eventually it becomes accepted as fact. This is exactly what Karl Rove and the Republican leadership have done. It goes back to the Bush years. The second Bush, tell the big lie over and over and over again. Weapons of mass destruction, weapons of mass destruction, weapons of mass destruction. Over and over and over. And even when the lie is proven to be a lie, 90% of the people who believed it to begin with will continue to believe it. The reference to Herr Goebbels drew quick response and rebuke from Republicans. Burton was reminded that when now Democratic Governor Jerry Brown was running in this last election to become a governor again of California, and he compared Republican challenger Meg Whitman to Goebbels during an interview for the same reason. Same reason. And Burton said, how to get in trouble? Oh, wait a minute. That's right. She won the election. Which, of course, she didn't. He said it tongue in cheek. He won it big, Burton said. God damn, he was in trouble. What are you talking about? That's right. That's right. Burton went on. That was Goebbels. A big lie. They say they don't care about facts. They're going to lie. So, I mean, that's not pejorative to them. They probably wear it as a compliment. And they do. But the statement from the Romney campaign is the one I liked the most. This little prissy little bastard. Boy, Romney is really starting to irritate me. Isn't he you? I mean, aren't you just tired of this little, that little smirk that he wears on his face? Did you see him at the, of course you did, at the Republican convention when he gave his acceptance speech with his head tilted back just a little bit, looking from side to side with that little smirk on his face? Oh, hi. Yes, it's me. Hi. Here I am. Did you like my wife? Isn't she cute? The Romney campaign said President Obama promised to lift up American politics. Unfortunately, some of his supporters, by employing rhetoric that has no place in our political system, are bringing it down to the gutter. No. Really? It was just John Burton all by himself, huh? The comments by California Democratic Chair John Burton likening the Republican Party to Nazis and Joseph Goebbels are just such an instance. All people of goodwill should repudiate such disgraceful words. That was from Norm Coleman. Is he the one that ran for Senate in Minnesota? I think so. The one that Al Franken beat. Norm Coleman is now the national co-chairman of the Romney Jewish Coalition. Really? No kidding. Okay. And the Republican National Committee also called Burton's opinion, quote, outrageous and insulting to all Americans. Burton spoke the truth. It's the truth. It is historical fact. In the California Republican Party, they labeled it as, quote, exactly the kind of desperate, deranged rhetoric the Democrats are going to employ to distract voters from their failed record over the past 4 years. Failed record over the past 4 years. An Obama campaign spokesman, Ben LeBolt, also rebuked Burton, saying that his stance, quote, doesn't have any place in the political discourse here in Charlotte. Although the campaign has yet to say if it will call for Burton's resignation. Why should they call for somebody's resignation for speaking the truth? Huh? We're at that point, right? I know about speaking the truth. I know what happens, what can happen to you when you put hardcore truth out there coupled with, you know, really hardcore language.
From the left, it's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous in Seattle. Thank you, Anonymous. The message, strike back against corporate media sponsor Mike Malone today and tomorrow. Anonymous put the word and in all caps. Today and tomorrow. Thanks, Anonymous. Muchas gracias. Republicans. Email here from Duncan in Langley, Washington. This is kind of good. This is a good email. I want to share this with you because unless you're a certain age, you really, and no fault of your own, no fault of your own, you don't know what these political conventions used to be about. I'm old enough to remember when. Well, let Duncan explain it. He writes, Mike, I've watched these stupid conventions since I was a kid, LBJ Goldwater, for example. I cannot remember one as mendacious, banal, superficial, and downright empty of any content as this one was, the Republicans. That includes the conventions for Reagan, Dole, and even Mondale. Stunning lies and cornball sloganeering were the high points. What was the point? Why have them at all? To introduce the candidate to the nation? Oh, please. These conventions used to be about voting on the party's candidates and putting together the planks of their platform that they would then run their candidates on. They used to make speeches about the different candidates and speeches for or against different positions that they wanted included or stripped from the party platform. They used to argue, bargain, form coalitions, make heated deals to get things in or out of the platform or to win over delegates. They used to vote on the platform planks. They famously used, they famously used to roll call state after state for the delegates to give their votes. And they were tabulated until one of the candidates got the nomination. Occasionally, there were even upsets and, yes, surprises. What are they now? And what was this particular Republican thing? They never gave any specific information about just how they were going to do anything. I guess they couldn't because they never stated anything about what they were going to do if elected, with the exception of three things. Do away with Obamacare, cut taxes on businesses, and reduce regulations on businesses. They never gave any specifics about their platform or what they were running on. Nothing specific about foreign policy. Nothing offered about health care, nothing at all about bringing jobs back into the country, nothing about reining in Wall Street's criminal activity, nothing about building any infrastructure, nothing about women's issues or about veterans or the wars that the Republicans started, nothing specific about education, nothing specific about energy, nothing specific about anything. They didn't even say what was specifically in the Republican platform that they were running on. All we got were outright lies about Obama, vague generalities, banal sloganeering, and tearjerker sidebar stories that had nothing at all to do with either the candidates or the unmentioned party platform. The whole thing was a Fox News special. My father was an American, and my mother is Canadian. I was born in Canada and raised in the USA. For all of my life, I have had to stomach hearing the endless, arrogant, and pompous prattle about the USA being the greatest, most free, most just, best educated, most blah, 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 blah country in the world. The self-absorbed egomania is infuriating, especially when it comes from those who have never even been out of the country. But if people swallow this simplistic garbage being peddled by Boss Rove and the Koch brothers, then it will exhibit and prove that the USI is number one, all right. The stupidest country on the planet. Signed, Duncan in Langley, Washington. Yes, you're absolutely right, Duncan. The stupidest country on the planet, politically speaking. In some areas, the United States produces all sorts of technological breakthroughs and wonderful things. Of course, they're usually put together by people with non-European-sounding names. Okay, Stephen Jobs, whatever. This guy is going to be used as an example for the next, 1,000 years. And Gary, who's in North Vancouver, BC, Canada, writes, Mike, as a Canadian, I'm a regular listener to your program and appreciate that you bring a voice of sanity to an otherwise bleak landscape. Thank you. We are faring little better in Canada with a right-wing Harper government doing its best to kill the voice of science in relation to climate change and the environment. With your Republican Party, I do not understand why their followers are not in favor of doing away with elections. Why not select 5 corporate CEOs, perhaps General Electric, Exxon, General Foods, Citibank, and Apple, the latter to make it look cool. Why not just select 5 corporate CEOs and turn the operation of the country over to them? What better plan could there be in a party that believes so strongly in the wonders of free enterprise? Thereafter, we would be guaranteed to have good business decisions. Think of how much money would be saved by not having elections. It has already been done in practice. This would do away with the charade. Keep up the good work, Gary in North Vancouver. Well, that was done. Thanks, Gary. That was done. Don't you remember? Very few Americans remember this. I don't know why I would expect a Canadian to remember it. But with with the stolen presidency. Back in December 8th, 2000, come on, Mike, get it right, a day that is not only will it live in infamy, except for the fact that most Americans wouldn't have a clue. If you walked up to most Americans, I'm saying most, and said, what is the significance of December 8th, 2000? They would look at you and say, I don't know, was there a sale going on? But if you'll remember, after the theft and prior to the inauguration of George W. Bush, remember what the right-wingers were talking about? That the adults were now going to take over after all those years of Bill Clinton boinking his, it didn't really boink her, his intern. She more or less boinked him. That does happen. Where was I? Oh, yeah. The Clinton administration was supposed to have been so childish. Would you like to see my underwear? It was supposed to have been so childish. So the adults were taking over. Do you remember? Don't you remember? And not only that, but a businessman was going to head the executive branch. Yes, indeedy, George W. Bush, a businessman. And, of course, then you had Dick Cheney, this foul, vicious, vampiric son of a bitch in the background, smirking and snorting and cutting the deals that would further corporate America. But out front, there he is, a businessman, George W. Bush. Hey, George.
Hey.
So we've done this, Gary. We had a businessman run. But you see, you can't run. I don't care what Republicans say. Republicans are goddamn filth. I don't care what they say. You cannot run a government unless it's one set up by Goebbels and Himmler and Bormann and Hitler and the rest of these bastards. And we're getting very close to that with the Republicans. They are fascists. They do use the Goebbels playbook. They are Nazis. But you can't run a government the way you run a business unless you do it the way the Nazis did, with the cooperation of Hugo Boss and Siemens and Krupp and right down the list. All those German corporations who are more than willing to help das Vaterland und Herr Hitler. We have that here. We have it here. It is here. So as far as your suggestion, Gary, why not just turn it over to five CEOs and let them run things? That pretty much is happening now. We still have the charade. We still have the pretend of elections as far as the executive branch is concerned. We still have the pretend. Oh, who's going to be president? Oh, let's go. Go, team, go. And it has taken on the stink of a locker room as if it were some kind of a sporting contest. My president's going to be your president. Oh, no, he's going to be. I'm going to be. No, you got you. Goddamn it. Screaming back and forth. So think of how much money would be saved by not having elections. Yeah, but that money goes to support the most noble of American institutions, the television industry.
And them that was caught in a cover are all rich and free, but they chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true. Cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true. Oh, so true. Cause I saw it on TV.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous in Seattle. Thank you, Anonymous. The message, strike back against corporate media. Sponsor Mike Malloy today and tomorrow. Thank you again, Anonymous. I appreciate it. And there's this. I mentioned it earlier in the program tonight, but it bears repeating. The Nobel laureate, Desmond Tutu, the Archbishop Emeritus Anglican of Cape Town, South Africa, wrote in the British newspaper, the Guardian, that George W. Bush and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair should face prosecution at the International Criminal Court for their role in the 2003 invasion of Iraq. See, here's another man calling for truth. Here's another man speaking the truth. Nothing but the truth. These two fascist killers, Blair and Bush, should be made to answer for their actions. This is what Desmond Tutu is calling for. Now, see, there's a religious man that you might be able to get your mind around a little bit, right? Because he's not looking for the out. He's not saying, well, kill them all. Jesus will sort them out when they all get to heaven or hell. No, no. He's asking for accountability. He is asking for accountability in the here and now. Put these two war criminals on trial. Of course, if you put Blair and Bush on trial, then you're going to have to include Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and a whole raft of evil fascist killers that ran this country for 8 years. Were I more versed in the British government under Blair, I could probably name four or five more from his government who also should face criminal prosecution in The Hague. As Tutu wrote, the Iraq war, quote, has destabilized and polarized the world to a greater extent than any other conflict in history. Yeah, it was easy to be anti-fascist. It was easy to be against the war that raged over the planet. And since we won the war, we got to write the history of the war. And the way we wrote the history was to say that the fascism and the imperialism of Germany, Italy, Spain, Japan were responsible. Whether that is the truth or not depends on who is writing the history. Nispa? But Bishop Tutu wrote, quote, those responsible for this suffering and loss of life should be treading the same path as some of their African and Asian peers who have been made to answer for their actions in The Hague. And Bishop Tutu, maybe a couple of Middle Europeans also, who have been made to answer for their actions in The Hague. But Bush and Blair, probably not, Bishop Tutu, because Bush and Blair are very, very, very Caucasian. And they both speak English, although the former doesn't speak it all that well. Not to mention the fact that between Bush and Blair, they probably control more destructive power than any two men did at any time in the history of the planet. And they still live in countries and still are very influential, yes, they are, in those countries, to the extent that any attempt to haul these filthy sons of bitches before a tribunal in The Hague would probably result in some very, very ruffled feathers. And between the U.S. and the U.K., there's an awful lot of destructive power. There's an awful lot of feathers to be ruffled. So the best we can do is to kind of sit back and in a very sardonic, cynical way, chuckle, laugh at the attempts to bring African or Asian mass killers to justice. And usually the United States and the United Kingdom are leading voices in that attempt. Have you noticed that? They are the first. Doesn't make any difference if a Democrat or Republican, Tory or Liberal, Labor in the UK. It makes no difference. But these politicians, these American and English politicians, are the first to stand up on their hind legs and bay and howl and shriek about bringing killers to justice. How many have been suggested from the continent of Africa that should be hauled before the tribunal? How many from South Asia, Southeast Asia? How many from the Balkans? But you notice they just don't call on Putin or Blair or Bush or Cameron or Obama, even though Obama is not Caucasian. Well, Desmond Tutu, Your Eminence, sir. Well, I agree with you totally. There are two chances of your suggestion coming to fruition. As we say here in the South of the United States, two chances, slim and none. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a referral.